CITR 101.9 FM.
101.9 cable.
And in Vancouver, the bestest, radiest show about hockey. Our
hockey? What the hell was
wow,
that?
Wow, I was just looking at my email here and like, oh, hockey's coming up this Sunday. I play floor hockey with my friends and...
the Bouge.
With some fellow cartoonists, Robin Bougie, Brian Fukushima, Sean Esty, and others have made their appearances, and we all get our asses kicked, especially Robin Bougie.
Yeah. Do you guys play
a Nancy boy.
Do you guys play like skins and shirts? That would attract attention.
That would be the smelliest. It's already pretty smelly, but yeah, no.
It brings visuals.
So how are you doing, Don?
I'm doing okay.
Today we're supposed to do an interview with Matt Kint, but Matt's not answering his phone.
Yes. So hopefully he will call and we will start the interview. Until then, we're just going to chat about comics and stuff.
Yeah. Maybe we'll cover some stuff recently we've enjoyed because we haven't done that in a little while. Mm-hmm. And there's always comics we like. Yeah, I'm going to say something that I got, you know, we always talk about alternative comics, and I'm going to talk about something mainstream I just read yesterday, and I loved.
What?
Grant Morrison, Frank Wheatley, Superman, All-Star Superman. Oh, I loved it.
Everybody, you know, loved what's, it. You know what's funny is on, I got the mic on sideways.
Yeah, you're sounding kind of like, oh, hello, I'm Don King.
Yeah, on the, there was it, Spike TV Scream Awards, they had the best comic book series. And it was a choice between 30 Days of Night, Why the Last Man, All-Star Superman, and Ultimate Fantastic Four. Those are the four that they picked from, and they picked 30 Days of Night.
Oh.
Even though it came out about 6 years ago.
Oh, come on,
I
people.
Give me a break.
You know, like, Why the Last Man? Local artist, Pia Guerrera. Yeah. Wonderful, super talented. And she will be a part of the upcoming Inkstuds Art Show, which I shall have a flyer release soon at the Gem Gallery, January 17th till February 6th.
Yeah, so who else is going to be in the show?
Oh, geez, a big list of awesomeness. There's going to be Colin Upton.
Wow, he's huge.
Donald King. He's a bit of a butt knob.
Yeah, he's a bit of an idiot.
David Boswell. Okay, let's see if I can. Colin, Don, David Boswell, George Metzger, Robin Bougie, Rebecca Dart, James Lloyd, Steve Rolston.
Fred Grissom.
Ed Brisson will have a piece.
Okay.
I said Pia. I've got a couple pieces
Mike
at home
Meyer?
By Mike Meyer, Mark Bell.
Miriam Lubicki.
Miriam Lubicki gave me a wonderful, or sent me an image, a wonderful painting. I am blown away. She is an awesome lady. Our phone is ringing.
Oh, the phone's ringing.
Let's hope it's Matt. We're just going to bring him right on. Or maybe I'll play a song and bring him on. Okay, I'm going to play
sure
a song.
Make sure it's him and not some yo-yo.
Yeah, because Lord knows we can end up with Dawn again. Mm-hmm. So, here we go.
fascinations in a palindrome. And it's them I hear a voice. And it's them I hear a voice. It says we're basically alone.
CITR 101.9 FM. That was Andrew Bird, off the album Weather Systems, and the song is Palindromes. It's quite a lovely track. That was indeed Matt Kind, so I'm going to bring him on air. Hi, Matt.
How's it going?
Good. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Did I pronounce your last name properly? Is it Kind?
Yeah, was it Kind?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Cool.
Excellent. So, thank you for joining us. Apparently, there was some cell phone reception issues, which, for some reason, it's happened more than once with cell phone problems with the radio show. So, don't feel bad.
All right, that's cool.
It's I think cell phone companies just hate the ink studs.
Plus, this is like an old, Wolfman Jack radio station. It's not too, it's not too modernized.
So I guess we'll say who you are. Your new book, newish. It's about 2 months old, I guess. Yeah, it's new.
Yeah.
Super Spy, fantastic collection of which I heartily enjoyed. Non-linear mess of awesomeness. Well, I don't want to say mess because it's very specific and precise, but there's just so much in there, which was preluded by the Two Sisters graphic novel. As well as you did the Pistol Whip series.
Yep.
Which I'll admittedly, I haven't read.
Yeah.
Nice.
But I love Super Spy. My reading time is unfortunately limited by a school schedule that beats me like a wet dog.
Yeah, I actually mentioned it. I did tell Colin about it, by the way, because I did mention it on the Best Books of the Year show. I said that this was like the best book I had read in the last week. It was just fantastic.
Awesome. Thanks a lot.
Really liked it.
So how long have you been working on the idea of Super Spy, and maybe describe what Super Spy is?
Super Spy, it started probably, 2 years ago. I was part of an art show. It was like a group exhibit. And I had just finished, the Yellow Menace, the second Pistol Whip book. I finished that, and I was kind of in between projects, and I was just trying to think of a project to do for this art show. And I got the idea for doing like a series of comic strips and having building a real spy briefcase with all these little gadgets in it, and then having the comic strips sort of relate to the pieces in the briefcase. So I did it. It was like an installation for the show, and you go to the show and then the strips are on the wall and then next to the actual briefcase. But then on the last strip, then it says you got to go look for this secret box somewhere in the art exhibit, and then so you go find the secret box, and inside the box is the final comic strips to end the story. So you find out how it ends.
That's awesome.
And, so that's kind of where Super Spy was born.
fits in with the book, because it's how was I going to put it. You have almost,
you keep
like
people guessing.
Yeah. How much work do you put into like making a comic that's actually interactive, where people have like how much do you want people to have to figure out what's going on? Because you really let them figure out as they read it. You know, it's
that's always a worry of mine, because I really like the idea of putting things in there and you have to figure it out, and there's no set of instructions to tell you what to do. I like that idea, but then at the same time it makes me nervous that nobody's going to get it.
I try to walk
that line where it's something that even if you don't get it, you'll enjoy it. But then there's hints and things in there to kind of reward you. If you do pay attention, then you get a little bonus. So hopefully it works that way.
I was actually going to ask about the Two Sisters book. Was when you did the Two Sisters book, was that like there are parts that cross over with the Super Spy, And yeah. I was wondering if that was that the plan intention, like was that originally the plan to have the first one be kind of a lead off point for the second one?
Yeah, I kind of thought when I was working on it, I thought, and I love spies, I had tons of story ideas, and I thought, well, I'll just do a series of books that are sort of standalone, but then they sort of connect. You can read them together, and you get a bigger story. But you can they're still standalone books. So I initially thought I would do that and just you know keep pumping out spy books every once in a while.
So were you interested in spy stories and things when you were a kid?
Yeah, totally. I grew up. My parents took us to every James Bond movie at the theater. You know, when it came out, like one of my earliest memories is going to see Moonraker at the drive-in, which isn't probably not the greatest spy movie ever, but it was at the time. You know, I don't know. I just loved that stuff as a kid, and I grew up on all the pulp stuff, and I like Doc Savage and all the detective things. So all that stuff sort of fit together to me.
Why don't we jump into kind of talking about who you are, like maybe a little biographical information, like where you come from, like what was your start in comics and what kind of books have you worked on? And then we can get like a whole deluge of super spy, super secret discussion, I guess.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I don't know. I grew up in Lexington, Missouri. It's like a small town outside of Kansas City here in Missouri. I grew up there, and then we moved to St. Louis, like my last year of high school, and I've lived here ever since. All my family's around here, and my wife, I met her here, and her family's here. So we're kind of planted here in St. Louis. So since high school, I've been here, and I've been doing comics since I was a kid. I mean, I grew up reading all the same stuff. If you're still reading comics now, you probably read what I read when I was growing up, like every Marvel and DC book.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask was which comics were kind of the ones that got you interested in more than reading comics and wanting to be part of that.
Yeah, I know my brother. He's like 7 years older than me, and he was huge in the comics. So I just sort of adopted that interest, you know, when I was growing up too. And he had a big stack of them, and I would read his, or I'd sneak into his room and read them, and then I'd start to get my own. But that was back when you had to buy them at the supermarket. So we'd go to the grocery store, and I'd, you know, it was the little spinner rack you'd have to pull them off of. Yeah, I started reading them then. And I was, I'm trying to think. The earliest stuff I remember really liking was like Frank Miller's Daredevil. I think he just killed Elektra.
Yeah.
Like when I started reading it, I was like, wow, this is great. And
Brett Warnock, when we interviewed Brett and Chris for the show a while ago, he said the exact same thing. He liked the Frank Miller's Daredevils was one of the first comics that just dragged him in.
Yeah, it totally was. And just the art was so different than everything else, and then the story was just so much more adult than anything else I'd been reading. And I don't know, it's just really good. So that stuff really, really hooked me in. And then, of course, I caught the tail end of it, so then I Frank Miller was gone, and I was still reading Daredevil.
Yeah. And, I'm sorry.
What's that?
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I know.
They weren't that bad.
Well, at the time, though, I was so young, like, I couldn't tell the difference between when Frank Miller left and somebody else began. I think Klaus Janson was doing the art after
Yeah, he
Frank
kept
Miller
going
left.
On. It had the look to it.
Yeah, it still had that feel to it, and I was like, is that a different guy?
Yeah.
I don't know how old I was when I figured that out, but
a bunch of them were written by Denny O'Neill, and he's good in my books.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
he's awesome.
Yeah, there's a few good issues in there. Some
Mazzucchelli.
My earliest memories.
No. When you were a kid or when you were growing up, did you what was kind of more your focus? Did you write stories or did you get involved in like just making pictures or?
Yeah, I guess I was just more. It was more drawing. We read a lot. My parents just, you know, when we went to the bookstore, it's like, pick out a book, you know, get whatever you want. So it was always so much fun. Like, we read tons of books. And then I've always liked to draw. I can't remember not drawing. But I don't know that I ever really put stories and pictures together when I was younger. I would always draw characters I liked, or I would just draw things and do art projects and stuff, but I never really put the writing and the art together when I was younger. Probably not till high school that I start to.
Was there any what were the sort of the art influences that you had outside of like comic books you would be reading? Like, was there any other, like, any fine artists or illustrators that really grabbed you?
Yeah, I always Edward Hopper. I love him.
Oh yeah,
his paintings are great. I just like the, and I think it's the thing I liked about or the thing that always drew my attention was paintings or art that had, sort of had a story to it, even if there wasn't like anything written.
Oh yeah,
like, I think a lot of Edward Hopper's, he's got like these lonely people in offices at night, and I don't know, there's just so much like little hidden stories.
It makes you wonder.
Kind of hiding in his art, yeah.
Yeah, it makes you wonder what the characters are thinking sometimes.
Yeah, yeah, and I kind of like that where, you know, there's definitely a story there, and he's not telling it to you. You can kind of make it up, so I kind of like that. I was definitely more drawn to that than, you know, the abstract things or, like, I don't know. Mm-hmm. It definitely had to have some sort of hook that made me think, well, there's more to that picture than just the image.
Yeah, that's awesome. But what was your family life like? What did your mom and dad do? Were they encouraging for someone wanting to?
Yeah, my parents are super supportive. They, you know, I can't say a bad thing about them. They, just growing up, my mom was a teacher, my dad was a preacher, and they were home most of the time with us, and they spent a lot of time with us, let us, you know, encouraged whatever we wanted to do. So if it was drawing, and they bought me my first drawing table, and which I still have and use. And they just, you know, whatever we needed or wanted, they didn't spoil us, but they definitely encouraged
the creative sides.
Yeah, definitely. So,
well, that's fantastic.
It was great.
What were the first attempts that you did to make comics, to actually, like, kind of start doing it?
The first formal attempt at doing a comic was a collaboration with my brother, and he was in high school at the time, and I think he just graduated. It was his first year of college, and he had an idea for a story with. I still have these pages, which no one will ever see, and I hesitate to talk about it. But he wrote this story about the Watchers, you know, in Marvel, those big-headed guys that would just observe. So he had this idea for a story where one of the Watchers gets sick of watching, and he's going to take things into his own hands and sort of step in and make things right. He had a big gun and everything. And he caught me in my head for him.
Rogue Watcher. That's awesome.
Totally. Yeah, he's really, he's like a badass Watcher. It was funny. I think I did like 24 pages of story with him going to town. And so that was my first story. Yeah.
What type of style was it done in? Because the style that you used for Super Spy and all that, it doesn't look like it would lend itself very well to the Watcher.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, it's definitely evolved. Like, I mean, you think about the art I did in high school, it's just not the same. Everything I was doing then, it was either, you know, still life drawings with charcoal or like pen and ink, super detailed pen and ink drawings with like technical pens and things, and a lot of cross hatching and that stuff. So that story was before I used brushes at all, and it was just like Sharpie marker and cross hatching. So it's pretty awful, but it's just your typical high school or whatever, eighth grade drawing.
Yeah, attempts.
It's interesting.
Yeah, yeah. You know, you're still trying to figure everything out, and I'm still, even I hadn't used half the tools that were available. Like, I'd never used those real, like, fine technical pens before, so I was trying those out and just seeing what I liked.
The charcoal thing.
Yeah, nothing to show you from that era.
Yeah.
It's all hidden in a lockbox.
Totally,
the key has been lost.
My wife wanted me to throw it away, but I'm not going to show it.
Yeah. Put it in a time capsule.
Yeah.
50 years. You mentioned charcoal, and I can actually see that, like, looking at your work, especially with the Two Sisters book, where it's just kind of, you're working on, like, creating figures, but not, like, elaborate figures, but more images of figures, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what I'm going for, Don?
Yeah.
Is that something you're working on when you're working in charcoal? Because, like, that kind of seems like it would blend itself well, like the strong use of blacks and stuff. Is that part that's really carried over?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to think of the link. I think I had a big breakthrough when I was in college, and I started, I don't know, I was reading everything I could about all how the process, like everybody's artistic process, just every kind of artist.
It's fascinating.
Yeah, I was like, I'm going to start, you know, using a brush. It seems like everybody's using a brush, so I'm going to try a brush. And then I sort of had a breakthrough with that, where the lines that was giving me were so different than just like pen or anything I've gotten before, that I started using that. And then the brush does lend itself to, you know, filling in big areas of black, and then you just start paying attention to, I don't know, like how everything is drawn, and you see how blacks are laid in. Like, if you go through and look at the, I love the essentials, the Marvel essential books, because everything's black and white, and you can go through and you can see how they inked everything. It's just,
yeah,
that stuff is just awesome to look at.
Actually, that was one of the things I was going to ask you. Did you do any of the books on computer at all?
Or? I do. I have a weird relationship with a computer. When I graduated from college, I had a degree in graphic design. So right out of school, I had got design jobs, and it was just using Photoshop and design programs all the time. So I know how to use all that stuff. But then with my art, I feel like, you know, I took all those fine art classes. I really like seeing the lines and seeing the sort of hand of the artist, you know, in the work. So
I try to do
as much as I can by hand, and then what I can do by hand, I'll do on the computer, and then just sort of have the computer is like I bring that in at the end and sort of pull everything together.
Yeah, so
I didn't really answer your question, but
all the
drawings are by hand.
Yeah, yeah, because it looked like you kind of like the tactile. Yeah, like putting something to paper, like that seems to be something that I get from reading it, is that it looks like that's a part that you wouldn't want to give up, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I like the feel of brush and ink on paper. It's almost sort of a addictive, compulsive sort of, you know, activity.
Mm-hmm.
Dragging a brush on paper. So
out of curiosity's sake, do you still use a technical pen?
I don't use those pens. I can't really stand them. I can't get mine out of it. Yeah.
Either can I. I thought I remember in high school I got one. I was like, yeah, now I've got a technical pen, and I hated it. I absolutely hated it.
I know. I do. There's all the cleanup factor, which I'm super lazy. I never want to clean those things anyway. And if like the disposable pens, I just can't. I don't know. I just can't get a good line out of it. It's such a lifeless, straight line.
I was going to ask about the choice of like using like a sort of a yellowish paper, or with the Super Spy, it almost looks like an old journal. Were they actually drawn on a paper like that, or did you add that, or was it just printed on that? Or
no, I do. My process is all the pages were inked, and the second there's like usually like a second color. All that was done on watercolor paper.
Oh,
I use that because there's like that extra little texture that watercolor paper has that I kind of like.
Mm.
So I would do all that, and then I scanned it all in, and then I go to a lot of estate sales. I have tons of old books. So I just took a few old pages from a book, I don't even know what it was. It was just like a blank, old, weathered page, and I scanned it in and used that as the background. So then I just laid the drawings on top of that in Photoshop. Yeah. To make it look like it was on that old paper.
Yeah, well, it's a really like inviting look to it. Like it's a warm. It just gives it a warm glow. There's just something about it that makes it more readable than if it was just black and white. You know,
that's cool. Yeah, thanks. That's one thing I wanted to have. Every book I've done since the first Pistolwood book, I wanted to be that way. But it's always like a budget thing. When Pistolwood came out, nobody knew who I was, and they weren't going to spend ton of money to print everything, you know, four color and make it look like I wanted it to. But they did tint the pistol pages. They tinted it like 10% yellow, mm-hmm. just to make it a little bit less harsh, but still, I was like, it just doesn't look right.
Yeah.
So every book I've been getting a little closer and a little closer, and this one that finally they gave me four color, and I was like, well, I just want it to look exactly how I want it to look. So it's nice to be able to do that.
So it's something you've kind of been building up towards.
Yeah,
achieving.
Yeah. Finally, I got a budget to do it.
Yeah, I was actually wondering about the color in the book, because you seem to use different types of color for the different chapters or different characters and things. And I was wondering did you have like a theory that you followed, or was it just something that would grab you to use a certain color? Or?
Yeah, sort of my general rule was it was based on geography. So if the chapter took place in like a I don't know if it was in. I'm trying to think of where that.
Like Germany or something.
Why don't
Germany is blue. France and England were mostly greens. And then all the stuff, the Arabian Nights stuff, was all like oranges, warm,
yeah,
and brown color. So I tried to cue the color to the location.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, because I was actually reading it last night, and I was going, oh, it's the color adds, you know?
Yeah.
I think I should give a little description of the book to people so kind of have a rough idea, the listeners. It's 250-page, 300-page graphic novel?
Yeah, it's
336 pages. 336 pages. It's set, 1944, 1943? 43,
yeah,
I guess.
Yeah, it's like 43 to 45, like. It goes up to the end of the war. So.
And it's a finely honed interconnecting stories of different kind of spy adventure happening in Europe.
Actually, you know what? When I've been recommending the book, I work at a comic store. When I recommend the book to people, like a few people have looked at it and kind of like, I kind of had the same initial impression I had. It was like the style of it. Leaves it to almost, it's almost unexpected that I'm getting straight spy stories, because it almost looks like it's a little bit, you know, like most comics done in sort of the style that you use are usually like sort of slice of life stories or
like Mazzucchelli stuff. And
yeah, just sort of like little like vignettes that aren't like an adventure story or are not like they just don't seem to drag you in like that. And a couple of people have told me like that they had the same impression I did when they looked at it, wasn't sure what I was getting into until you get about 20 pages in, you go, oh, it's spy stories. I get it. You know? Like the title didn't give it away.
Yeah, super spy. And I totally understand that, though. To me, that's always been my struggle, is that I love, like, Mazzucchelli. I love his stuff, and I love all the slice of life stuff. But I read everything, though. So I still read, like, I don't know, whatever superhero book.
Yeah.
I read the graphic novels. So I read all that stuff, so I want it all at the same time.
Yeah, well, you really got it all in there, because that's what I love, too. I love, like, a mix. Like, I like something that drags me in, that's, like, it's exciting to read, but you know, has a little bit more to it than just a punch-up, you know?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I really enjoy it. It was so good. I was going to ask you also about the size difference. Was there a
because Two Sisters is like pretty much magazine size for people kind of looking at it. And I guess Super Spy is kind of in between Digest and comic size.
Yeah,
as
they
far height and width.
That's usually with Top Shelf. We have discussions about that, and they sort of suggested. Well, with Pistol Whip, it sort of started with that. They wanted a larger size book with air, like a lot of space around the art.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were like, they suggested that size. I was like, oh, that's okay. I mean, that was kind of what, like, I had mocked up the whole book ahead of time, and it was about the same size. So it started there, and then the Two Sisters, they're like, we'll do it the same size. Because to me, it's all set in the same sort of area. It's the same kind of feel to it and everything. So I like the books to sort of fit together and look it together. But then they didn't know that Two Sisters was going to be like 300 pages. I think, in the art.
Yeah.
So then the size is already set, and so then it went out, and it's just such a big book. I'm happy with it. I don't know. It's kind of, when I'm reading a book, I like something that's a little bit easier to hold.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So it was partially that, and partly just economics, too. It's a little, I mean, the giant full-color book, that size is going to be...
$40, probably.
No, yeah.
Yeah, and so I'd like... I want it to be cheap. I love $20 books that are thick.
Yeah.
Me too. I'd rather have a $20 thick book than a $30 thick book. And it's just,
yeah.
From my point of view, when I go to the store to shop, that's kind of what I want. So I just wanted to make it something that would attract me too.
Yeah. I was going to ask too about the, considering how interlocked all the chapters are, like even with, or even like from book to book, they're interlocked or interlinked. I was wondering, like, did you basically write the whole thing first and then go back and figure out what you're going to do first? Or process?
When I wrote Two Sisters, I didn't have Super Spy. Was just, I didn't have any ideas for it. I mean, I probably had a few little ideas for some short stories, but nothing cohesive. And then, as I started to think about it, what the next book was going to be and what I was going to do, I started just write down little bits and pieces here and there, like like little ideas for action that could happen, or little, certain characters or pieces of a story here and there. And then, so then I really wrote it like in bullet points. So it's like, this guy does this, this guy does that. And then I shuffle them around, put them in order, the order that kind of made sense, and then flesh them out as I went along. But so I had some of the, most of the main characters, I kind of knew where they were going to end up, and I knew some of the story points and some of the little bits I wanted to get in there. But yeah, a lot of it just kind of grows and evolves as I was working on it.
Mm-hmm. Actually, I think I just thought of what the difference it has between most comics in this style is that it has like a very intricately put together plot, and that's one thing I wasn't expecting, was like a plot that would drag me from character to character through the story back and forth, you know. I thought that was so well done.
Thanks a lot. I know people ask me about that and how much I had ahead of time, and I don't know how to answer it. I don't know. I remember doing it, but it was
it's just done.
It's definitely fell together. I don't understand how it happened.
Are there any other comics you can think of where people do spy stories? That was another thing that I was thinking, is that it's almost like an untapped,
a couple
resource or something. Like, there's not a whole lot of just straight spy comics that I've seen.
Yeah, I know. Most of the stuff coming out now, it's always like a modern day, like, I don't know, with all the super technology sort of.
I'd say Queen and Country might be close.
Yeah,
Queen and Country, that kind of thing. Those are, but that stuff, I don't know, that it doesn't seem so much spy to me as like a.
Yeah, internet.
Kind of like thriller.
International intrigue or something.
Kind of a comic book version of the TV show Spooks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't, all the cell phones and things, they don't. They're not as much fun.
You want the two-way wristwatch radio?
Yeah.
One of the little weird little gadget things and the x-ray stuff. So.
And that's kind of one of the intriguing parts of this, is like really exploring all these things that people would go to in order to pass along these secret messages, like hidden codes, and it's like now you can just like...
All that stuff is real. I didn't have to make up anything.
That's what I was going to ask, is how much of it is pretty much all of it based on stories about real spies?
I don't think there's anything in there I made up that wasn't an actual technique that was used by spies during the time. And a couple of those things I thought were probably used and I wasn't sure, and then I would find out later, and like, I went to the spy museum in Washington, D.C. over the, I guess, when the SPX happened this year.
Oh, really?
A few weeks ago. So I went there just to look at everything, and I was like, I don't know, it's just crazy to see the real invisible writing on this paper and little pens and little cigarettes that have messages stuck in them. It's crazy.
Yeah, I remember one of the stories where you kind of use a bit of that in one of the books is when they left somebody to like the dead body to be found with the stuff on. I remember they did that in Spain to send false information to the Germans because they thought they were finding
a dead
attaché or something like that.
Yeah. I remember I read about that story and I was like, I can't believe I couldn't write that.
Yeah.
To be any more fantastical.
Yeah. Yeah. They made a movie of that one too with Clifton Webb, I think, years ago. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, that's crazy. That's the one that people don't believe is real. I'm like, that really happened.
Well, I don't think the submarine's real.
Yeah. Hey, you know, the submarine is real. They totally had an underwater sub, but it was a failure. It didn't work.
Yeah.
They had like a thingy ride on like a torpedo, and they used it to try to, I don't know what.
That sounds scary.
I know. There's totally, you look at it, Google that. You'll find there's images of it, but it was not a success.
The torpedo you ride.
Yeah.
I thought you. Where did you get the idea to do the radio code part? Was I thought just awesome, where it was just such a simple idea, where you had the code being sent through the radio message, but you had like the code highlighted. I thought that was just like, it's on the cover of the book too, as well, I think.
Oh yeah. I am. Gosh, I'm trying to think of where that came from. I can't remember.
Yeah.
I'll never remember. Yeah, it's just one of those things I don't know. It's probably some research I did.
Yeah, it was a great visual, though. That was like a really awesome visual way of telling the what was going on, because I find that sometimes in comics when they have music playing or things on the radio, you tend to just kind of scan over it or something, because it's usually it's sort of thematically related but not directly related to the story, and that just got me right into it. You know, it's like you're reading it and seeing how it fits in, you know.
Yeah, that was one of those. Yeah, that's again one of those things I'm always worried about. I'm like, are people going to get to that? Because it was like every fifth word or whatever was white instead of sort of off white.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Just subtle enough.
Like, well, people get that, but I'm glad you did.
Oh, yeah, no, that worked awesome. That was one of my favorite parts. I was like, I was blown away.
Awesome thing. Yeah, it's super hard to write because I have to come up with a story that, the main inspiration for that story was I just wanted to do something with robots in it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, how am I going to do robots in 1943?
Yeah.
And it's a spy story. And I was like, well, I'll do like a radio show with robots in it. And I get to do all the robots.
That's cool.
I just want to remind people, this is Inkstead's radio show on CATR 101.9 FM. We are talking to Matt Kint about Super Spy. And just wanted to do the, you know, who y'all be listening to word.
Yeah.
You've created a little universe with Super Spy. Is there a plan to expand onto it?
I'm sure I will. I don't know. I didn't save any ideas. Like every spy idea I had is in that book right now. So I'm building another notebook with ideas and things in it. And one of the stories I'm working on now is sort of it's set in the 50s, and it's like a sort of a weird historical ghost story.
Hmm.
About these some semi-famous people that, you know, they're ghosts. It's like Houdini and Morgan Earp, White Earp's brother, and then a few other ghosts that sort of meet and have to figure these things out. But then one of the ghosts is going to be a spy from Super Spy, I guess. So.
I take it you have an interest in history.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. It's just, there's so much fun, neat things. That, I don't know. Most of it is just I like to read about it. I like to do the research. So doing a story set in an era or time period or whatever is just a good excuse to buy a bunch of books.
Yeah.
it's research, baby. I
know, man. Yeah. I got like 3 shelves full of spy books.
Yeah.
I'm like, that's all tax deductible.
Yeah. Actually, what's funny is when you mentioned that that you threw every spy story you had basically into the book. That reminded me of there was an interview with Billy Wilder when he said that when he makes a comedy, when he filmed a comedy, he would put as many jokes into the book as he could, because he says in general you're going to lose a third of them to people just not finding them funny, so you got to get as much of them in there as possible, because that's someone's going to go, oh, that one's awesome, you know.
yeah, you can't lose them.
Yeah, totally.
One thing I want to touch on with your graphic design work, you did the design for Lost Girls, if I'm not correct.
Yeah.
What's the work you did on that?
I basically did what Alan Moore and Melinda Gebbe told me to do.
Here's your orders.
Not a bad job. I mean, they knew what they wanted, and then I was basically their hands, you know, to help them do it, get what they wanted done. So
yeah, it's
was just one of those jobs where, you know, they came to me. Like most of my work does sort of have like an older sort of vintage feel to it, so I guess they felt like I'd be the right fit for the book, to make it feel more like, you know, the time period and everything. So, basically they had an idea for what they wanted, and then I just tried to make it, try to make them happy.
Yeah, it did have you did a great job on that. It's a gorgeous 3-volume thing, and it actually does have the look of like a Lewis Carroll book or something like that.
Yeah, that's what they wanted to look like. They wanted to look really pretty and like, sort of like those old-fashioned children's book type things with the flowery logo and type and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it was fun to do.
The world's filthiest children's book.
Yeah, no kidding. I totally, so I laid out all the interior pages too, and I have a 4-year-old daughter, so I'd have to wait till bedtime and break it out. And then my wife, we have like a big open living room where the computer is, and so my wife sitting on the couch doing something, and I'm zoomed in to big page of some very sassy art. And she's like, "What are you doing?"
Yeah.
Nothing.
I'm working.
Yeah.
I'm making a living here.
I think
but anyway, that was kind of fun. It was funny to work on.
In Harvey Pekar's the movie or book, there's a part where they go to England and meet Alan and Melinda, and there's a part where Joyce is covering the their adopted daughter's eyes, and because Melinda's showing them pages.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I definitely. I have a couple copies of it, and they're going to remain sealed.
Yeah, honey, don't look.
Actually, I did have kind of a comic fan question. I noticed one of the characters in Two Sisters, like one of the Alan character. I noticed his name was Alan Scott. Was that intentional to be like the old Golden Age character?
That was I think it was subconscious. I think I named him, and then I know those names are just rattling around in my head, so it just was unconsciously that, and I was like, that's good.
No, I just noticed that. I was looking through it last night, and I went, wait a minute, that's the Green Lantern.
Well,
yeah, that works.
Yeah.
He is one of the cooler Golden Age characters.
Wow, and it's from the Golden Age. It has that total old feeling to it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. That's cool. Yeah, bonus points to you for that.
Yeah.
Geek bonus points. Who knows what they'll do for him in life?
Yeah. I know. Well, where are you going to cash those in at? And then what do you get?
Yeah. I was also going to ask one thing that really grabbed me a few times was how much attention do you pay to the page layout when you put together these? Because I noticed that you'll just like, you do a great job of like leading the eye into the next panel with like a nose pointing at a certain thing or whatever. I totally follow, like you could follow the eye, you know, the eye movement through the page. It just totally flows. Is that something?
There's just a few, I don't know. There's like just in design, I think that's one of the sort of the layout rules that they sort of pick up, is that like all the photos, all, you know, if somebody's facing left or right, if they're facing to the right, then you need to have them looking into the spine. You never want to have them looking off to the outside of the page.
I
don't know why that is. So I think some of that is that, and then I don't know. And it's interesting because this book I actually worked on, I didn't work on full pages. So each like piece of original art, if you see the original art, each panel is its own page.
Mm-hmm.
So
really?
When I was doing the art, I was just panel, and then and I was doing that because I worked on it over the last year. I was posting them online on Top Shelf's website. As I'd finish a chapter, I'd put it up there, and you can just click through them. So you click through the panel to read it.
Yeah, I've got a couple things on Top Shelf website as well. That's a good website for people to check out too. They always have some stuff up there that's really awesome.
Yeah, it's fun to check out. It's free and some neat stuff.
Free comics.
That's why with those pages, I sort of and then part of it was I was so tired of working. I work from home, so I was just so sick of being in the house all the time. That if I worked on the smaller pages, I could just take them to the coffee shop and work.
Not really.
All day and kind of get out of the house. So. Mm-hmm.
I think Chester Brown works the same way. I think he does a lot of stuff like panel by panel and then pieces it together later and sees what he needs to fill in gaps and things.
Yeah, I remember reading that from a long time ago. I read that and I was like, what a crazy way to work.
I know.
Well, he does a couple of different things. He used to do that where he'd just have the panels, he'd draw the panels, do the panel layout. Now, like, I don't know if you saw that Wonder Woman piece he did for a fundraiser for this Canadian thing. I forget what it was for. I can't remember. I'm going to lose my Canadian citizenship just for not knowing what it was for. But he actually does like transparencies now.
Oh, really?
Where he'll do a character and just have it all overlaid and have that laid out to figure out the whole image.
Oh, really?
So I don't know if he did the Louis Riel like that, but that's for this poster. And I know Seth does a lot of that too.
Wow. It seems like a lot of extra work.
I know, that does seem like a lot of patience for that.
Yeah.
You wonder why they don't have a voluminous output.
Yeah.
It's always good.
I got too many story ideas, to take that much time. I'm going to die before I get all my stories done.
So. Yeah, well, it's funny because Dave McKeon that said that he likes to try and draw his stories close to the time it would take somebody to read them, just so you could get the... the energy kind of like just get it done so that people will look at it, and because you know they're going to spend 4 seconds looking at a panel. He doesn't want to spend a day and a half drawing it when they're going to flip through it. He said it's important, but
you definitely as a comic creator, you think about, like, there's always a balance. It's like, how much time am I going to put on each panel mm-hmm. of a story that somebody's going to read in 10 minutes? And it's, part of it is, you know, keep the story moving. Part of it is I got 10 other stories I wanted to tell still. But then you also want to do, if you crank it out too fast, or if there's not enough there, then people aren't going to pick it up in the first place. They're like, eh.
Yeah, or they won't pick up the next one or something.
Yeah. So it's sort of a tough balance to strike in the storytelling style. But I find that too much detail almost can slow down a story too, where I just don't, you know, it takes the energy out of it, and then it doesn't flow very well. But that's why I definitely, like, I like Dave McKean. It's funny because Cages, I think, is all that pen and work he did.
That's my favorite part of it.
The paint stuff is just so awesome, yeah. And, like, I like that better than the paint stuff. You could just leave all the paintings out.
Yeah.
Well, it's not even painting. It's just playing with Photoshop at this point.
Yeah.
But I think Comics Journal, somebody had Alex Ross interview, and they were showing his art, and they showed a lot of some of his pen and ink stuff he'd done. It was just like strict cartooning.
Oh yeah, it's gorgeous.
That was so much better. I was like, man, do everything like that.
I know. I found out that he was friends with Bruce Timm, and he loved like the Bruce Timm Batman animated style stuff. And he did, I think it was in the Comics Journal, that ran like a sketchbook pages of like Superman fighting Captain Marvel in the animated style, and they were stunning. I was like, you know, and then I read that Bruce Timm said, throw away your camera. You don't need it. You can draw. Just get it down.
Yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah.
There's just so much more energy in those drawings, and that's...
Yeah. So. He brings all that knowledge he has to the table, but without kind of bogging down with this photo reference stuff. I love that. I like the energy of it and how raw it is, and, you know, you can see the talent.
Yep.
Just remind people, if you feel like checking out Matt's stuff, you can go to supersecretspy.com and order your own set of cyanide breath mints.
Yeah.
Perfectly safe.
Yeah, that's got to be my one of my favorite little merchandising gimmicks, I guess.
Yeah.
The cyanide breath mint.
That's funny. Yeah, it's fun to sell those at conventions.
Yeah, that is cool.
It's okay. It
is almost like something that you get out of an old, like, you have to mail away box tops for, or something, like a decoder ring or something.
Yeah. There's like little metal tins I got, and I ran out of this. So I got these little brown bottles, you know, and they're super creepy. It's like
like arsenic?
Crazy medicine you get in like a glass brown bottle.
Oh, yeah, from an apothecary or something.
Yeah, it's totally scary. But,
oh, wow. That's a great idea, though. It stays with the theme, you know.
Yeah. That's part of the fun for me, is just kind of think of little gadgety stuff. I don't know. I'm a sucker for marketing.
I think we're at our time limit. Mm-hmm. We've hit our wall. I really want to thank you for taking the time to chat with us, Matt.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
And so the next thing we can look forward to at some point is the Ghost Spy story you're mentioning, or is...
Yeah, it's like a historical ghost story. There's no title yet, so untitled ghost story.
But in the meanwhile, Super Spy is a fantastic journey to delve yourself into.
I loved it. Absolutely loved it.
So thank you very much for joining us.
Awesome. Thanks a lot, guys.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
And have a wonderful day. Thanks.
All right, thanks. You too.
Okay, bye.
All right, bye.
That was Mr. Matt Kint, author of Super Spy, Two Sisters, and Pistol Whip. Pistol Whip, I do need to read.
Yeah, me too.
I feel bad that I haven't read it. Normally, I'm on the ball for reading everything, one interview, so on. So, Matt, my sincerest apologies. Something's wrong with me.
Give your head a shake, man.
Yeah. You know what? All I got to say is there's 2 weeks left in the semester, for school, and when those 2 weeks are done, mm-hmm. I'm going to be a happier man.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. Or just pickled.
Mm-hmm. Or a little of both. So what events are coming up? We're going to mention a couple things before.
Comic Jam at the Clubhouse. I forget what it's called. Down on 2nd. It's sushi restaurant. You just go in through. It's all the way upstairs in the back.
Yeah, it's down on West 2nd between Canby and Main Street.
I think it's around Manitoba or something. Mm-hmm. I'm bad. Sorry. I don't have the information. Go to VancouverComicJam.com to find out more info. What else we got going on?
Once again, you got the art show coming up in January.
In January, as I mentioned before, which I'm very excited about. I'll have a flyer to show everyone soon, full of chock full of awesomeness. And really, it's a quiet time in comics right now. Well, in Vancouver, Christmas is coming up, so I think everyone's kind of
There's no comic conventions coming up. I think there's like one of those ones at the Croatian Center, but they're not very. Comic-y.
They're like collectible, aren't they? Where you go and buy like an overpriced Grateful Dead record.
Yeah, exactly. Well, or no, it's more like buy an old broken lunchbox.
There we go.
Yeah.
And trust me, Don has a room of them.
No.
Next week, my guest will be John Bell. Author of Invaders from the North. I'll be joined by Colin Upton and Ken Bozum, who Barking Raven Press is his thing. 1918 was a great comic he did. And
great local creator.
Yeah, I can't remember his main thing he does. He does a great strip, and I can't remember the name of it. So I am officially... I'm failing this week. I'm a failure.
We won't bring it up next week.
November 29th, our guest will be Joe Matt. I'm quite excited about that.
You're going to get him to masturbate on air? Or he will anyway. Don't worry about it. You don't have to ask.
You know, let's have a little dignity, respect on this show.
Dignity is Joe Matt. See the cover of his last book?
You know what? Joe Matt is one of my favorite cartoonists, and I'm looking forward to interviewing him.
I've got the How to Be Cheap poster hanging on the fridge at home.
Yeah, it's Don's life motto.
Yeah.
He keeps stealing like sheets of toilet paper, like actual squares of it from my house. It's like, what the hell, Don? Leave my TP alone. Yeah. After that, Brian Ralph will be the first Thursday in December, possibly. Just still need to square that up. Frank Santoro will be joining us. His new book from Storyville is an old book, but it's gorgeous. It has an introduction by Chris Ware. Okay, if you have an introduction by Chris Ware, you've done something right.
You gotta, it means someone's going to have to look at it, at the very least.
You've done good. And, you know, there's a lot more coming up. We have a lot of good interviews planned. And I will leave it as a surprise. And it's coming close to Christmas, so we can't do anything too close to Christmas. I will leave off with Boys by M.I.A. Is it M.I.A. or Mia?
Mia?
Mia. I'm getting a shrug from the music guy here at CITR. Luke, meet the music guy.
He's the guy.
Meh. Meh. Okay, we're going to play, so meh. Okay, up next, Crimes and Treasons, if they're on time. Are they on time? No.
Oh, there's a surprise.
Hey!
Chicken.